Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 372.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we all breathe a sigh of relief because I'm finally caught up on And Just Like That. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and the national crisis is over. I saw Carrie's Last Supper outfit, and in some ways, that's all that really matters. And I know that that intro will be alienating to some in the audience, but will be welcoming to other people in the audience. And you know what? You're both right. Today, we won't talk about the Sex and the City spinoff, but instead we will talk about snack drawers under your bed when plant-based meats get weird. We'll also do a little light election stuff. We'll discuss the one place in America where socioeconomic classes mix. And finally, we'll weigh in on the internal debate over whether you should let people wear shoes in your home. It's more controversial than you think. Before we get into me introducing people, I just want to remind listeners, if you want to support the show, you can go to the Patreon. That's patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. We just posted an episode about a wife who refused to go to a celebratory dinner for her husband's promotion because she didn't like the menu. So there was a lot to say about this lady. We also posted one about a parent's role and what saucy things their kids might be wearing out. Lots of feelings on that one. So we basically dip into all the thorny issues. The bonuses is where we get wild. So don't forget to go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. You can support the show and get bonus episodes. And everyone's happy. Now, I'm so excited by today's panel. Oh, my God. Folks, this is an all-star panel, all right? You've been warned. Get ready, because we have with us, joining us for the manyth time, comedian. By the way, I've seen this man perform live, and he is just, I mean, truly excellent. I have never had a bad time watching him perform live. But on top of that, he is the host of the daily podcast called Stand Up with Pete Dominic, so titled because we have with us the excellent Pete Dominic. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Gein. It's great to be back on Fake the Nation. Very excited to be here and joining you back on your wonderful show.
Oh, thank you so much, Pete. We're always so happy to have you. And I'm also joined by, now, folks, again, you've heard her on the show manyth times. They're a Broadway performer, an actor, co-host of the podcast Town Hall, a black and queer podcast that is so excellent. You should be subscribing immediately. You always enjoy their takes. It is the one and only Peppermint.
Hey, Nagin. It's so good to be here with you and Pete. I'm happy that we're finally on together.
Oh, my gosh.
Barry, this is going to be fun. This is going to be the best show that's ever come out, I think.
Pew, pew, pew.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure on the three of us. Here we go. Let's get into it with topic number one. Actually, before we get into it, can I just tell you? I have a very weird feeling in my body today because I just performed for Columbia University's entering like fresh people class. They don't call them fresh people, really. They call them first years. But I feel like it was a missed opportunity to, why don't we call them fresh people? Anyways, that's just a side complaint from me. but it was funny because I had to like just go all out, do a full hour at 9 a.m. and then in front of 18-year-olds who are like scared about life, you know, because it's their like third day in New York City, like in college, all of the fears and everything, you know what I mean? I'm just like, I don't have any friends and what's going to happen to me? And oh gosh. And
oh, so, I used to perform at orientation at my alma mater almost every year and several others. Cause I have a whole like hour for those kids. Cause I remember those days so vividly.
Oh, my
and
God.
I think it's wonderful. I would never agree, as you have, to do it at 9 a.m.
That's 9 a.m. Good grief. That's even before the continental breakfast. I got to tell you, I was just walking today from the SAG-AFTRA picket line, and they were NYU Radio City
brag.
Music hall for their orientation, like, you know, NYU class of 2027. Welcome.
Well, that's where they go. They go to Radio City Music
Hall. Apparently, darling,
wow.
They changed the marquee and everything. I thought it was like Lady Gaga performance, yeah. And it was NYU.
Wow.
I went to
hilarious.
A state school, a 2-year state school in New York, and ours was at a Denny's.
Lies. How big was the class?
Very small. Peppermint.
Mine was a 2-year certificate school. We don't even get a real diploma. And ours was just like in the parking lot anyway.
Wow, you really did downgrade me.
Ours was in a really quite beautiful auditorium that seated, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 people. So I don't know. I guess I win. Do I win?
Only if you're still doing what your degree was for, what you were studying.
No, then, no. Sort of. I mean, I was a double major in undergrad, but okay. Then I went to graduate school for like 500 other things.
Then so, the schools know, win. The school wins.
There's a no. Yeah. They
I
made
just
a
dropped
lot of
my
money.
Daughter off for her first week of college. She's a freshman or a whatever person at Ithaca College, which is great because she's done far better than me. But now their orientations at all colleges, you guys, are online, apparently. I mean,
what?
They aren't
still.
They aren't. What I learned is, and we can move on, but like a lot of college, you can optionally just stay in your dorm room. So if you didn't want to go to the orientation at Radio City at NYU, you probably could have watched it on Zoom is my guess.
Oh my God, who wouldn't want to go to the orientation at Radio City? Jesus Christ.
No.
All right, folks, clearly we can talk about nothing for a really long time. But instead, we are going to jump into the actual first topic of this week, which is that we learned about a trend that's being immortalized on TikTok. And that trend is organized snack compartments for under your bed. Now, despite this being one of the dumbest sentences that I've ever uttered, I remember when I said we could talk about nothing. We're just going to continue talking about nothing just to, like, you know, amuse-bouche the show. I want to know what you think of under-the-bed snacks.
Well, listen, I'll tell you, I have had many a snacks in my bed, both figuratively and literally. And they end up under the bed either way. So, like, you know, it's all good. But I think this really is a very New York City kind of thing. I don't know. I haven't seen the trend myself, but it feels very New York. I'm not mad at organized drawers for anything and like thinking smart about storage if you're in a New York City apartment, especially if it's a studio. Now, if it's a mansion, then we got problems.
What are we doing? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
why? Yeah.
Exactly.
No, agree. I was like, this is a studio apartment phenomenon. Or what makes more sense now that I've just done a college gig, it's a dorm room thing. That makes a lot of sense in a dorm room.
Yeah.
Pete, you should have the organization level in this snack drawer. First of all, it was like 12,000 calories. No, that's not even enough. It was like 100,000 calories worth of the worst ever for you snacks. Like if I ate two of those things, I would just blow up. You know what I mean? But also just the level of like decanting gummy bear bags into a particular jars. Peppermint is swooning over this concept. But Pete, what do you think?
Well, I think if you live in one room or a van, then fine. Of course you have your food nearby. Where else is it going to be?
Right.
If that's not the case, then you're a monster. Now, unlike Peppermint, I have not had snacks in my bed, literally, because you know I don't want crumbs and so on. And I haven't had them figuratively because I'm married. So it's been so long.
Your spouse is not a snack? You better recant that.
That's not inaccurate. So, but...
And decant that.
I won't even put my phone near my bed because I think it's a personal detriment.
Really?
Like you have to have good health, good mental hygiene in that bed and physical hygiene. I think the idea of having crumbs and attracting bugs and critters to my bed place where I cannot defend myself because I'm sleeping is the line I will not cross.
There's a lot of people who crossed that line during the pandemic. I failed to tell you.
You're right. It's a good point. We're not talking about the pandemic. That's a good variable. But if you don't live in one room and it's not a pandemic,
what are you doing?
Come on.
And it's not a Canadian wildfire.
Could be other, like, yes.
There's like two exceptions.
Yes.
I also want to say every time I'm sick, I cross that line. I bring.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not like doing it every morning, but like I have had a candy bar in the bed or something, you know.
Right. Or if I'm sick, or if I'm like feeling really sorry for myself.
I can't see now. The only way I can see Peppermint now is with one of those little bed tables over their lap, you know, just that little.
No.
Like a flower in a glass.
I have had plenty of. The time when I've had snacks in my bed the most have been when I've been recovering. Well, you said sick, recovering from, like, I've had a couple surgeries. They've been, you know, elective. Mm-hmm. And you can't get up and walk. And so, like, those chips are going to be they're going to be next to the bed.
Listen, I want to throw one controversial thing. I don't know how you identify.
What, darling,
but
tell us.
But I identify as white, and snacks in the bed, eating snacks in the bed seems like a very white thing. Maybe it's an all ethnicity thing, but it seems like we're filthier, I feel.
Interesting. You know what? This issue is going to come back in the last segment when we talk about shoes. Yeah, but okay. Yeah.
I only say this, and I'll say, I know this is going to sound really even worse, but in college, my roommate was a black guy. I once ate while sitting on his bed, and he stabbed me with a plastic fork. So that's just one person. That's just one black person.
Trauma response.
And he then said, as he did about everything, that's a white thing. He basically said that no matter what I did, though, to be fair.
Right. Well, folks, let me know what you think about this very weird trend. But watch the video if you can find it on TikTok, because it's an incredible feat of organization for something that I think is. Also, I just want to say last thing about snacks. I'm not going to waste calories on snacks unless they're like high level. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to eat like. My idea of like eating something that's bad for you is like, this better be the best made thing if it's going to cost me
some carb calories.
Mm. That's the idea.
Well, I just want to ask one thing. Like, hey, the snacks be damned. What I'm here for is the under bed storage, like regardless of what's in the drawer.
That's different.
It's true.
New.
No.
But it's great.
And my under bed is... you know, is a slut for items. Is there so many things?
My underbed has, I could talk about that forever. I'm all about minimalism, and I've got all those Tupperware things with the wheel. I got the Tupperware things with the wheels under my bed. And I also have a small child.
You gotta put them somewhere. All right, let's go on to the next weird thing, which is the elections. Last week, we missed everything because we taped early. I was away. Thank you so much to Benari for hosting. What an excellent show with Christian Finnegan and Liz Winstead and Benari Poulton. So we missed the debate. We missed the, what's that other thing that happened? The indictment. I just want to give the two of you an opportunity to just say whatever you need to say. Let's start with the debate. If you have any thoughts.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have not been able to even look at a Republican, much less support one forever. But I'll tell you, this Vivek Ramaswamy, he really impressed me. I think I'm going to get behind his campaign.
In what way?
And I think in the way that
in
I love
shoving it over,
I can't get enough of this cat. Trump made it so that if you had experience in government or politics, you weren't probably going to be a great candidate anymore. It just became like WWF. Now it's like, who's the best performer? Doesn't matter if you've ever done anything. Certainly doesn't matter if you're a good person or honest. It's just like, who's good? So this cat is good. He's slick. No matter what they say, would they read his quotes right back to him? He's like, well, that's not what I said. He is really good. And that's the future of the Republican Party.
Yeah, it's wild. It's definitely wild. I didn't watch the debates. I can't say I much care for him. He is charismatic, which is something that can't be said for a lot of the other contenders that were on that stage. And so he was probably the star of the, I either am going to continue to support Donald Trump and all of his criminalities, or I'd like to be his vice president
lapdog
contest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think the piece, the pop culture piece to come out of the two pop culture pieces to come out of the debates that I was most fascinated with was the TikTokification of Ron DeSantis's expressions.
Yes.
On there. I thought that was great. And then also the playing of that song, Rich Men from Richmond, during the debate, which has been in and of itself topic of debate, and a phenomenon. But apparently Oliver Anthony, the singer-songwriter, came out and said that he's not conservative, not Republican, and that that song was actually written about those folks. I think the jury is still out because some of the lyrics in the song, he actually attacks like fat people and their fudge rounds that they're maybe not storing under their beds. But I, you know, I thought that was probably the most
interesting thing to come out of
the debate.
Well, his complaint about taxes was a red flag to me. We're taxed on everything. Like, stop it. The problem is that we're not taxed enough. Well, many, you know, the rich aren't taxed. Like, you out yourself when you start complaining about taxes. If you want to complain about taxes, sure, but talk about taxing billionaires who and companies that are getting away with it. Don't, like, act like, you know, the rest of us. It's a preposterous. I didn't like that, but those are good. I love Peppermint's both those takeaways. The Ron DeSantis facial expressions, he's not human, so.
The facial expressions are wild because you can really see an attempt at, like, holding a smile and, like, feeling a smile. It was so, I was just like, oh my God, I've never had to think about feeling this smile. Like, I think you know what I mean?
Deep cut here for the Trekkies in the audience, but like, it reminds me of when Data, who was an android and wasn't human, was attempting to express human emotion and feeling, which he couldn't do. And so it's like this awkward, like,
staying on the trend, C-3PO is more human than Ron DeSantis.
No doubt.
Now, okay, so let's move on quickly. And just if you have any remarks on the indictment, it's funny because I kept thinking as I was walking to the studio this week, oh, like, I wasn't really around for the indictments. I was away. So, like, what? But I was away, like, in Chicago. I was still in America working on another, like, news quiz show. So it's like I was deeply here for the indictments. But oddly, I just don't know that it hit in the way. Did it hit? Did it? What did it do for either of you? I feel oddly alienated from the cultural conversation around the indictments.
Yeah, I think it was, Peppermint, I'll just jump in. I think it was really important, very consequential. I think these 19 defendants being brought to justice for trying to steal the election from Georgia voters where, you know, black folks, especially black women, saved that state twice. And now you get a black prosecutor. And I don't miss the symbolism there. And neither do a lot of the angry white folks who are saying, you know, going after her, including the House Republicans. But he, you know, the difference between this, you could say we've got indictment, you know, fever, too much of it. You start to turn away. No, because you saw the mugshot, which, of course, helped him raise more money.
Right.
And because, you know, he looks like he's such a victim all the time, but it's really important. And I think you're going to see a lot of justice, not only with Trump. I'm very excited to see Rudy Giuliani go to jail. So this is a good thing. It's something to celebrate. It's something we've been waiting for. Donald Trump's mugshot goes down in history with the worst of the worst.
Well, I have a mugshot question for you. I don't know, Peppermint, if you know the answer. I thought mugshots were always in black and white. Like, am I nuts? Like,
I don't know. Maybe since digital cameras, they're different.
I guess. I mean, there was something about the mugshot that almost felt like too high quality or something. Like, I just thought that the mugshot was going to be, like, grosser.
Well, he's one of the few who had hair and makeup just before.
Right. That's right. I was also just a little bit like, is there a fucking ring light in that mugshot? Like, what are we doing here? Like, I was like disappointed that the mugshot didn't look more like a driver's license photo or something. You know what I mean?
Well, whoever took that picture, whoever was behind that camera, if there's a camera, I don't know, whoever hit the click on the mouse that took that picture also gets to go down in history. I can't wait to buy that person's book.
I don't understand how they're, regarding the mugshots specifically, I can't understand how they were allowing some of these characters to take these mugshots in the poses that they were. Donald Trump's head was like basically bowed to the floor.
Yeah.
And then this Trevian Kuti woman, I don't know if you saw her mugshot. She has the most devious looking, like gremlin looking smile.
She
I don't understand if they were telling her a joke or like if she was like, this is like the kind of, this is the picture that you see before you get like possessed by the devil in all those scary movies. And I just didn't understand I thought like you're supposed to have a little bit of decorum, you know, like you can't wear hats in the courtroom and you have to stand up and look into the camera
and you
when
can't
you're getting
smile.
A mugshot.
I thought you, no, like, you can't smile.
Yeah, well, like yeah, what's happening?
People think a lot about those mugshots before they take them, whatever they want to project, right? I think we probably all would if we were sober mm-hmm. when I took mine. Did I just, is my mic on? But here's
hey,
the thing, Rudy
on.
Giuliani, I'm surprised more people aren't talking about during Rudy Giuliani's mugshot, he turned into a bat. Which I thought would be so more true. Headlines.
Because vampires
was there,
get
was there some mascara dripping from his face?
Yeah, it's
his
hair dye.
Okay, I do think that the release of the mugshots, because, you know, Trump's been indicted several times and we haven't had one, the release of the mugshots did feel like an accomplishment and something almost sort of tangible that we could, like, okay, here's a sign that something is happening within the criminal justice system. And the fact that it was their entire team and that the prosecutor said, I'm ready to do this on the next week, basically, it did feel like this was a stride in the direction of justice. We don't know what's going to happen, obviously, though.
Folks, let me know. What do you think? Did the mugshots work for you? Did the indictment week 3 or 4, however many, work for you? Hit me up on all the social medias. And you know what we're going to do right now? We're going to take a quick break so we can learn about our sponsors, and then we're going to come back. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket pocket money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two. We read a piece on the Washington Post about a new working paper from Maxim Massenkoff and Nathan Wilmers that makes the case that chain restaurants promote much more socioeconomic integration than do independently owned commercial businesses, or for that matter, traditional public institutions. Now, the paper finds that those at the very bottom and those at the very top of the income distribution are much more socioeconomically isolated than those in the broad middle. So the lowest and the highest end up kind of like self-segregating in their own places. Now, before we kind of get into the, chain restaurants that the broad middle does rub elbows in, where do you feel in your personal lives that you do this kind of socioeconomic mixing? Did this article make you wonder about your own level of socioeconomic mixing, whether in commercial spaces or in public spaces, in your own lives?
I don't get invited to places.
That's true.
I've never invited you anywhere.
It's a really thoughtful question. I think everybody might struggle with when they think about it. Your social life depends on your age and your family, mm-hmm. and all kinds of things. So I'm 47, married, live in the suburbs. One daughter just went to college. One daughter's in high school. But a lot of the time you hang out with and meet like your kids' friends out here in the wasteland. And mm-hmm. I came to realize that I don't like the whites. Because as things change, like in a predominantly like a lot of white spaces, you know, you were kind of trying to figure out which side people were on. So I started gravitating in those kind of social settings. Like I just would avoid people because I just didn't want to run into another Trumper. I didn't want to spend any time talking to them. So for me, like this is an interesting issue because I've always kind of gravitated towards people who weren't me, didn't look like a gargoyle. Mm. Crouched on a corner of a building, Skeletor, white, male, whatever, heterosexual. Like I'm more interested in people who are different, and I've tried to lead my family in that direction. But you know, it doesn't always work. People self-segregate, whether it's in school, whether it's in suburbs, mm-hmm. even where there's diversity, we still all self-segregate. Black folks hang out with black folks, Indian folks hang out with the Indian folks, Asians, and so on and so forth, and obviously the whites. So I mean, I wish that weren't the case. Church used to bring people together. There's different ways, but it's tough to make that happen unless you go to some of these chain restaurants that we're going to talk about, I guess.
Peppermint, what do you think?
I think in my life, it's probably, I mean, and definitely in the streets of New York, you encounter like lots of people. I think the sidewalk is one place where you're going to see, you know, I don't think that we've achieved like the private, like, penthouse entrance from the airplane yet. And so like everybody has to be on the sidewalk, and a lot more people of different socioeconomic standing ride the subway. I think that you can see all types of people at different, you know, times of the day, especially during like the morning hours, like rush hour hours. And so, you know, I think those are places where I think that those folks mix. I am shocked, actually, to hear that Chili's is the place where, you know, you could have a billionaire and a you know, someone who's not.
Well, somebody's never had their nachos.
Yeah.
Once you taste them.
I've never had their nachos. Wait, is that a pitch for their nachos? Are they good?
I mean, are they?
Everything at Chili's is pretty good. I mean,
aren't they known for the bloomin' onion?
No, that is.
Isn't that the baby back ribs?
Outback Steakhouse, Nagin.
Oh, I want my baby back, baby back, baby.
What is wrong with you?
Who, Chili's has the baby back.
Chili's baby back ribs. I want my baby back.
It's Chili's where people mix of different ethnicities and socioeconomics, but not so much women.
That was their 2020 ad, which only ran for like a month.
I love the idea that Chili's and Applebee's are going to use this sociology paper from like MIT professors as part of their marketing campaign.
Yeah, Applebee's doesn't need anything to make it seem. I love diversity and inclusion, but Applebee's does not need another thing to make that restaurant look and appear more cluttered than it already is.
I love the idea that the super wealthy would ever go into a Chili's. Like, let's get down to Chili's. I want to sit at the bar and have their boneless wings, sweetheart. Like, you could buy a Chili's and bring it to your house. Like, that guy's coming.
Yeah, they're the franchise owner.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, literally, though, they found this is where they found because they in the study they found that people who go to like the same stores, like CVS, for example. It's true that a rich person will go to a CVS and a poor person will go to a CVS for the same reasons, but they go to the one that's in their closest to their neighborhood.
To mm-hmm.
Well,
so
the CVS's ended up being self-segregated, right? Or the Rite Aids or the whatevers. Mm-hmm. And so, but the one place that doesn't, where a rich person still wants, can appreciate the value for money that you get at an Applebee's and at a Chili's and an Outback or whatever, it's so interesting to me that that's the one place that even a rich, like your Logan Roy's, will just be like, I want a bloomin' onion, you know? And that's interesting. I mean, first of all, do either of you actually ever frequent, I think it's hard when you live in New York City. Do either of you ever frequent these places?
I think
they used to have something in Times Square or whatever. I've been to an Olive Garden. I've been to Olive Garden.
I've been
I think
to
of
Olive
the Chili's and the everything we said. I don't remember the name of the restaurants. I've been to an Olive Garden the most of all of those places. But yeah, not really. I eat at like individual, like restaurants that aren't necessarily a chain.
Right, independently owned.
That's because
you live
go down to Times Square for that.
Right. I live in a place, like if you live in New York or a city, you know, you're gonna go out to eat, that's kind of low.
You ain't going to Chili's.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But it's kind of crazy to do that.
The same could be said of, you know, suburbs, but if you're gonna get something like that, where most of America, you know, might drop my daughters off at dance or wherever, they're going to be there for an hour, and I would go to Chili's or Applebee's or TGIF, one of those types of places. I would sit at the bar, I would get like a beer, and I would eat things. Like that would be my thing.
And was it like Bill Gates next to you? Like how was that?
I sat next to Jeffrey Epstein at an Applebee's.
At Chili's? Not probably the dance recital.
No, okay, I was actually at Epstein's house, I should have said. He had an Applebee's on his island where I was visiting, apparently.
Well, so here's the interesting thing, because we want for the institutions, the places where people kind of do this gathering, we want there to be some sort of like platonic ideal to where those places are. And to my mind, they would be libraries, right? And they would be public parks. You know, there would be places like that. Or even
what kind
like,
of weird, what kind of weird Legoland utopia does Nagin live in? Libraries and parks.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, libraries are a dying thing, right? They're shutting libraries left and right in our country, if you've heard.
Well, they've got a lot of books that are teaching our kids to be ashamed of themselves.
Their whiteness.
And also, there's a lot of books with sex in them. And so that's why we got to shut them all down.
Shut them all down. But the interesting thing is like, okay, so the interesting thing, the weird thing is like, one of the things the article pointed out is having more local libraries is good for promoting access. Even if closing and consolidating a few could theoretically promote more class mixing. So there's that weird conundrum of like, well, if we had fewer libraries that you had to kind of like go to another part of town to go to the library, maybe then you would rub elbows with someone from a different socioeconomic class.
Yeah, but nobody's incentivized to get up and go to the library, much less the Chili's.
Right, right. Well, yeah. And so I think there's a cheerful way of looking at this, which is there is actually one place where people can mix, and at least it's at chain restaurants. You know what I mean? But the other thing is, like, are you even talking to people? Is an Applebee's
the waitress?
Right. You kind of only interact with the wait staff.
Yeah.
And then you this sort of makes me understand, you know, like who is it, Friedman, who does the column for The Times and always starts his columns with like an interaction he had with a cab driver.
Is that right?
There's like a joke about
Well, I don't want to talk to anybody when I'm at the bar there. I don't understand that people are mixing there, that they're having conversations.
Right.
Unless you're at the bar, who's talking
exactly
to somebody in the other booth? Like it's not community to go to an Applebee's unless you're hanging out at a bar where you know, kind of mix with other people. But the question of, you know, us going out and where we mix with people that are in different socioeconomics, ethnicities, religions, backgrounds, that's the question of America. Point is, we're all here, but we're definitely not going to the same spaces most of the time. I would argue it's like sports stadiums, if anything.
There's a couple of suggestions I have, and I wonder if you guys have any to add, of ways to mix with unexpected folks.
Mm, okay.
One of them is... Now, this is, I'm not even sure if this will do the trick because I'm not, but I think that this is an international thing. So you might mix with a lot of international immigrant types and whatever, is to go to soccer games at bars. So there's certain bars in every city where they show soccer games. Like, and I know there's
every Mexican bar for sure.
So then you would mix with like a different set of people, I think, if you're like, let's say, an Iranian-American Muslim woman who lives in the East Village and you go to a place that shows soccer, you're going to mix with a different group.
Yeah, but that's that's a weird sample of
it's
people.
It's a weird sample.
Because they're soccer fans and those are bad people. I am one.
But they're international. There's like a broad range.
It's very international.
Them.
That's true.
It's very international, like lots of immigrants, first generation, you know, so you're going to meet some of those people. If you're not one of those things, that might be interesting for you.
More so than you would. I mean, I feel like that's true for anywhere in the world. If you go to a bar that's showing a soccer game, I feel like it's going to be more internationally mixed, like at least with the teams that are represented by those countries, than it would if you were to say go to an average football game. It's going to be less mixed for sure.
That's why I only go to hockey game night.
Oh, even that's super diverse.
Cornhole on ESPN.
So that's one idea. The other thing is, I think like having a dog is a big conversation starter at it, you know, wherever you are, intersection. I mean, because I've taken my dog to different places in America and he's a conversation starter, and it's, you know, or someone else's dog will be a conversation starter. So I feel like everyone should, I guess, get a dog so we can all talk.
Well, I feel like I think the most conversations I've started is when I bring my cat to dog spaces. People are like, what are you
Take
doing?
Your cat
I'm like,
out of here.
Listen, don't judge me. This is my therapy cat.
Do either of you have any suggestions of how people could change the socioeconomic mix?
I would like to change. I don't have any suggestions necessarily, but I do want to point out, like, I agree with you about the dog park moment, but then I'm thinking the rich folks just have like dog walkers.
Well,
so then we're here, we go back down again.
But at least you're meeting them.
I
think my answer is what I've always believed, which is to crush the rich with taxes so that those taxes go back into communities and create community spaces where we can mix the places that you describe, your utopias, you know, anything from fitness areas to parks to beaches to that. That's what you all those wealthy people own way too much space and stuff, and they push the rest of the world out. tax them, build community spaces, cut crime, create opportunity. That's how you do it.
I figured it out. Okay. The one place that not the one place, but one place that gets people more mixed and mingled, even more than a Chili's or an Applebee's or a dog park, uh-huh. is definitely a gay bar. Because you're going to get rich gay men. And I mean, it's not, it's gender wise, it's not very diverse. But like, you're going to get rich folks and poor folks in there, especially if there's go-go dancers or like sex workers in there, you know, who are like doing a little something on the side. Then like that's going to be like, I've seen rich guys, we know rich guys will go anywhere for sex. And so it happens in the gay bar.
Also a disproportionate amount of evangelicals you wouldn't expect.
Hello. Yes. The Republican convention held right outside there.
Can I say to you, like, I've wing womaned a few gay gentlemen in my life. And I feel like I've also been able to like just strike up conversation very easily at gay bars. I don't know what it is about a gay bar, but it's just like you just chat with whoever's in your, you know, line of sight.
And everybody's in there.
Yeah. It's just like very, yeah,
I don't
like, something...
I don't think, I think you kind of, I don't know, this is a whole different conversation I'd love to actually have in a more serious way. But I think like I used to go to gay bars when I lived in New York and certainly when I did comedy in many of them. And my wife and daughters like to go, like drag queen nights and stuff, and they always have a good time. But I feel like when I go to a gay bar, I might be misleading somebody. And I'm like, I'm probably not going to hook up with you. And yet here I am. So I'd love your advice on that because I love gay people and I'm, you know, a couple beers away from a gay experience sexually. But I would feel like I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm probably not. I'm not here for that. What do you think?
I mean, as long as you're not like presenting that you're threatened by it, and then it doesn't matter.
Well, never,
you know,
that.
Like,
I just don't want
to. The gays that are in there love to hear that straight guys are in there.
Honestly, I don't want. I'm being serious. This isn't a joke. I don't want to make anybody feel the way most women have always made me feel, let down and disappointed by not being interested.
I imagine that you would be just as welcomed as I am. Like, I'm also sexually irrelevant to gay men. But like, I feel like, you know, cause it's not always about just like the booty. It is about the fun. You know what I mean?
I will say this.
Yeah.
To wrap it up, the least gay place, Chili's.
Yes. I don't Very think true. That the gays are flocking to Chili's.
Agreed. All right, folks, let me know. Do you go to chain restaurants to rub elbows with the other classes? I'm so curious to know. And read this piece. It was in the Washington Post about about chain restaurants and how they are the great mixer. This is a working paper. I'm very excited to see the final product when it comes out in my nerdy way. All right, let us move on to topic number 3. So we spend 90% of our time indoors, and the question becomes, should you allow shoes in the house? This can be a sensitive question, and I think some people have a very strict position on it. I want you both to know that this is a safe space. You're allowed to have whatever position. So where are both of you at on the question of whether you can wear shoes in the house?
Oh, I mean, I don't, again, go to people's homes. And they don't come to mind. So I'll let Peppermint take this.
But you
and
still
I'll...
wear shoes in the world.
No, I think simply for me, I mean, if you're not providing me with the shoe that I prefer that supports my foot, I don't like walking around barefoot or just in socks in my own home because my feet hurt a little bit. All I need is a little arch. And so I like to wear a slipper almost all the time or even a flip-flop
that feeds that arch.
Now you're going to tell me if I'm going to come to your house, I'm going to have to take that off? Well, then you better provide
some arch support.
There are, I don't know about arch support, but I have friends who provide like booties or house slippers or something, like ones that they are like disposable or washable ones that they keep, especially if they don't have carpets. And
I don't know what
in
a
New
booty
York,
is.
But the thing is, in New York, like, we're not usually going to each other's houses like that much. I feel like, especially if people live in different boroughs, it's like we're going to meet somewhere in the middle. And so we're not taking off our shoes. However, when I have had the opportunity to go to somebody's house, and venture all the way, it's because it's like they just moved in or they got a new place or something. They just had a baby. And so then you go over and like it feels like a special occasion. And so like I just take off my shoes when I go to somebody else's house. I offer to do it. And if they're like, you don't have to, then fine. Also, but like, I want to.
I'd rather clean my floor than see your feet. I will tell you that 9 times out of 10, you don't have the feet. Wow. I mean, sometimes a person has a nice.
Okay. So I was just hanging out
You're not talking about my feet.
I'm not talking about, I mean, maybe. If your toes are climbing on top of each other, all I'm saying is I'm not judging you, but sock that shit up.
My toes are not climbing on top of each other. They are in formation and painted. Okay.
Ready to attack.
Now, as we all know, Peppermint has impeccable toes. And so my personal feeling is we don't like have an actual like strict rule in my house. I think the rule that we do have is that like we clean the floors a fair amount. We have a dog. So my position is if you have a dog, it's kind of like hard to not track stuff in anyways. Yeah. I'm not washing his feet every time he comes in and out. You know what I mean? So when you introduce a dog into the setup, you're sort of like accepting a lot of bacteria. Now, yeah. I was hanging out with Mo Rocca, who is a fellow Wait panelist, and he's also does segments on the CBS Sunday Morning Show. And he did a segment on this, which is why the idea came to me, because we were in an airport talking about this. And he was telling me that for the segment, he brought on a keep your shoes on. The keep your shoes off side was the easiest to find, because that's the popular opinion is that it's gross to have your shoes on in the house.
Sometimes you offend people's ethnic sensibilities. Like, yes. In a lot of the, you can speak to this probably more than I can, but like, in a lot of the Arab world, like that, if you come in here with your shoes,
you take them off. Yeah. It's unsanitary. It's unholy. It's all of that stuff. But Mo was saying that when he was making this piece, he had a hard time finding people that will go on the record. Maybe there's people that will secretly be like, no, we keep our shoes on. It doesn't matter. But to go on the record, it was a bit of a tough time. And he found Amy Dickinson, who's also a fellow Wait panelist. And she's also advice columnist or whatever. And she's this wonderful woman. And she lives in the country and in the Finger Lakes region, upstate New York. And she's got dogs and she, you know, and she's just like, we're sort of in and out of the dirt. We're not, it's just too late. It's like we live in the dirt. So what is the point of taking our shoes off? You know what I mean?
We're in the dirt anyway, so let's not take off our shoes. No, I'm happy to hear that most of the people are like skewing towards taking off their shoes. Yeah. I just appreciate it. But of course, I grew up. You know, I know that in the article they said there was a little bit of science behind it. And I grew up like you had to take off your shoes in the house. Like that was just like it was. So I'm obviously biased.
I feel like people who clean floors in their space, in their living space, have the strongest opinion on that. If you're not the one doing the cleaning, you're less concerned about the floors. I feel like that's why my wife screams at me. I do a lot of the floor cleaning, but she tends to do more of it, and I tend to be in the garden a lot. I bring that in there. I know the tone of her voice when I've tracked in some dirt or some grass or something. I'm in trouble. But that's because she's got to usually clean up after me. I don't care as much about it. But I think if you should have your indoor shoes and your outdoor shoes.
Yeah, agreed. And I think shoes off people are basically that. They have their indoor shoes. Now, I think the thing that I would honestly, my personal feeling when people come over, I definitely let people keep their shoes on, because for me, in a social situation, you know, one of the things that Amy Dickinson says, she says, you know, she said, I feel like you're valuing your floors instead of my comfort to keep my shoes on, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And my thing is like, it's not like I'm having parties every day. I will like just clean the floors after everybody leaves. It's like not that big of a deal. So that's kind of my thing with shoes. Cause I also, I'm going to be honest, I don't want to ruin people's outfits. You know, like if you have a look, you have a look. Let us, I want to be able to, I want for you to be able to retain that look.
Yeah. Indoor Crocs, outdoor Crocs. Enough said.
Okay. Folks, let me know. Where are you on this issue? I'm so curious to know. And again, I don't judge you either way because I sort of skate the line myself. I live on sort of both sides of it. Folks, that is the end of the show. I want to thank you both so much for being here. This was so much fun. And I want the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Peppermint, where do they do that?
They can hit me at Peppermint247 on all socials.
Peppermint247 on all socials. And then remind them the name of your podcast.
It's called Town Hall, a Black Queer Podcast, which I co-host with Bob the Drag Queen. And of course, it's available everywhere that they get their podcasts.
Oh my God. Subscribe. And Pete Dominic, where do they find you?
My podcast, by the way, is almost the exact same premise as Peppermint's. I host a daily podcast called Stand Up with Pete Dominic. I put it out almost every day, even including on weekends. I talk to the smartest people I can find about whatever they know a lot more about than I do.
It's a wonderful podcast. I've had the honor of being on it, and it is just such a great listen. So definitely subscribe to Stand Up with Pete Dominic. And folks, you know where to find me and all the things that I do. I just want to let you know I found out a couple of dates. I'm going to be in San Diego on September 27th and in San Francisco on September 29th doing the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me stand-up tour. So again, San Diego on the 27th of September and San Francisco on the 29th. Look those up. They're not on my personal website yet, so don't look them up on my website, but look them up wherever you find out about wait information. And I want to thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. That's our tremendous producer, Andrew McGuire, who kept the ship afloat while I was away. Thank you, everyone at HeadGum, for making the show a possibility. Thank you to Gabby Alter, who wrote our theme music. You can reach us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com with any ideas you might have, any electoral races to watch. We'll be taking those in the coming months, and we will be back in your earballs next week. That was a HeadGum podcast.